This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
The day's wrap of top business stories. Power Business.
Power Business with Kaya Sitole. Monday to Thursday, 6 to 8 p.m. and Fridays, 6 to 7 p.m.
Welcome back to the Monday evening edition of Power Business. My name is Kaya Sitole, here with you until 8 p.m. today and every day until Thursday, and then on Friday from 6 to 7 p.m. for our Express edition. 0861-987-000 is how you can get hold of us if you'd like to share some views relating to some of the business stories that we are covering. And the story that we'd like to focus on now is a story that has become quite prominent in banking circles over the past couple of months, and that is the story of Absa and its succession planning questions. We do know that earlier this year, they did come out and say that they'd reached a meeting of the minds between the then CEO, Daniel Minelle, and the board, and they decided that it was best to part ways on a no-fault basis. So last week, Friday, was indeed the Absa AGM, and it represented the first opportunity for shareholders and for individuals to then be able to engage with the board and ask questions about how far the process of dealing with the executive suite is coming along. We are joined now on the line by Nolwandle Mthombeni, who is from IntelliDex, where she serves as the senior banking analyst there. Good evening, Nolwandle.
Hi, Kaya. How are you?
I'm good. I assume that I'm having a much better day than the board would have had at the Friday when they firstly had to really engage with the vexing questions about succession planning and how they handled the exit of Daniel Minelle. How did that AGM go?
Well, I mean, you know, it is hardly the fireworks we'd like them to be. So they probably just got a few questions and were able to give some answers. But, you know, because there's really no news to tell, there wasn't the kind of engagement you would have liked to see where we got solid answers. Because, frankly, at this point in time, they still got a lot to do before they can have a firm succession plan in place.
And the succession planning question, Nolwandle, isn't just a question of the CEO. It's a question of the team that ought to support the CEO so that should anything happen to the CEO, there is a natural succession or a natural plugging of the gap. Is this something that Absa has probably not done as well as other banks in its sector?
Well, yes, it's quite clear that Absa has a long-standing succession planning problem, given that, you know, they find themselves in the position of being without a CEO again in the space of, you know, within the last 3 years. If you look at all the other banks, for example, I mean, the last one to have any changes in management, for example, was Nedbank, where they had the CFO resign, but immediately they had someone in place to take over there. When they announced the resignation of the former CFO, it was met with the appointment of the new person at the same time. So there has been a problem for a long time, and they did lose some talent. I mean, I remember at some point, you know, David Hartnett was deputy and was probably the one person expected to take over after Maria. You know, some drama happened, and then he resigned, and he landed up at Standard Bank in the C-suite there. So there has been a bit of a revolving door in terms of management teams there, but also now there are cultural problems which make it hard to keep someone and also to attract someone at the same time.
When we speak about cultural problems, is this really the issue that when we say Absa, we are still speaking about the amalgamation of different brands and different entities that somewhere along the line had to be put under one brand? I suppose it didn't help that they then had the marriage with Barclays, which will probably also introduce new dimensions to the question of culture. And then that marriage itself ended in divorce. It can't be easy trying to understand and shape the culture of Absa at any point in time.
Yeah, I think, you know, the most recent problems have to do with, you know, the decision that the board took in terms of changing direction of Absa post the divorce of Barclays. So at that point, they basically hit a reset button. And, you know, they had those people that they tried to change to a decentralized sort of operating model where you had people having their own silos and those management teams and those heads. And it left a vacuum where there really wasn't much space for a CEO to come in and get involved. So the changes from Barclays led to a lot of changes in terms of how the business operated. And, you know, they had their own strategy that didn't have any, that would not have had any input from anyone coming in. And, you know, people would have bought into that strategy and thought that's how the business should be ran. And any outsider coming in there would have been obviously met with a possibly a little bit of hostility if they tried to change how things are. And that, suppose that became the culture that was within the organization. And that's probably the culture that they are dealing with currently.
And I suppose at the end of the day, they do have to figure out how to manage the transition. The idea or the story that Wendy Lucas-Bull will herself be stepping down, did we get an idea of who might then step into the role as the new chair? Because obviously there is this reality that you have to find a new chair and find a new CEO, which is still not a very easy task.
Yeah, I mean, no news yet in terms of who will be taking over on the chairman front. And yeah, they'll just have to, you know, pick from the small pool of people that usually is available at this point in terms of who's going to take on those roles. So they've got a tough task though in terms of finding, I think within the chairman position, they can always just take an independent or on the current on the board and make them chair. And then, you know, finding a new non-exec not be a problem. I think it's the vacant CEO position that is more problematic at this point.
When we do look at the board, I mean, you know, the one thing that banks tend to do very well is really build up the institutional wisdom over time by having very seasoned and very experienced people in the board structure so that any interruptions are easily managed. When we look at the non-executive structure of APSA, are we seeing that depth in wisdom, or is it still something that also needs to be revisited in addition to the question of succession planning amongst executives?
So because the Reserve Bank has, you know, a lot of say in terms of who's on our board, I think we'll always be in a position where we have the right people because they have to either vet everyone coming in. And, you know, the idea of that depth and wisdom is based on how long you've been in the industry is all great, but I don't think that's necessarily how things need to be now. I mean, you can build up information and the learning of information and transfer information is happening at a much quicker pace. You don't need to be on the board for 13 years of a bank to be able to go to be on the board of another bank. So within APSA, there are, you know, people who have been on the board for a long time. But I think corporate governance now is moving towards the importance of more independence and changing of management team to be have a balance of both experienced and not as seasoned members on any board.
While we may be focusing on APSA now, because obviously of the way they find themselves in relation to the question of succession planning, what are we seeing as the emerging trends within the big banks, for example? Are we seeing everybody sort of trying to get their corporate governance structures to be more in line with what you've just said, more independence and getting that breadth and indeed that depth of wisdom to be prevalent in the boardrooms?
So typically, you know, with the boards, there's not much changes in terms of people on the board, sitting on the board for a long time. So those structural changes happen far longer and over time as opposed to something that happens from year to year. So as it stands now, I think there's only be any major changes if someone, you know, resigns from the board for whatever reasons. But I think even from a transformational perspective in a board level, and this is not just for banks, but I think just in general across the listed corporate sector, the transformation move is still happening, but not at, you know, the great pace, but there has been progress towards getting that.
Well, you know, a few weeks ago, we were reflecting on the report that was issued by the Banking Association of South Africa, actually authored by Intellidex, that sort of looked at what the picture looks like. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's always quite interesting that at the baseline or at the bottom, you see perhaps greater representation. So the demographics within institutions largely mirror what the demographics are across the country. But as you move up the corporate ladder, as you move up the, you know, roles and responsibilities and seniority, there still seems to be some form of attrition, where suddenly demographics aren't transformed in as much as you see at the bottom there. Is this a matter of the entire sector struggling to find the right or retain the right type of talent that will then say, hey, at the bottom of the pyramid, this is what our demographics look like, and this is mirrored by what you're seeing at the top?
Yeah, so I think, you know, on writing on this topic, I think the biggest observation I've had is that, you know, obviously at the lower to middle management, you know, got representation. But then the roles that are at the top are very few. So you can have people sitting in those roles for like 20 years. So the time in which you can get people to come through is obviously longer because they have to work through the ranks. So because just in terms of, you know, the numbers, quantitatively, there's much more senior, the positions available, the grassroots as opposed to the top. So because of that, getting people through, it requires an active initiative by management teams to create those roles and get those people into those roles and identify the talents and group them and put them up there. What we have is that, you know, you have your, you know, your very senior executives, they stay in those roles for a very long time. There's no actionable, you know, measures that are there to see that they are actually making sure that they're grooming people and bringing them up to the top, or creating, you know, good succession plans where you always have like a deputy there as well, who's also there, and being able to move people up and into more senior positions quicker. So basically what it looks like now is that it's great that at the bottom we've got the numbers, but it'll probably take 20 for that to go through and filter into the senior executive positions, which is one of the problems that we need to be more intentional about creating the transformation at the top.
How long can APSA manage to operate without a permanent CEO? Is this something that is flagged as a risk? Would the regulators be concerned about that long period of not knowing who really is the long-term established CEO? Or is this something that they'll be like, well, for as long as the bank is operating, for as long as there's a board, we're good to go?
Yeah, so, you know, in this day and age, no one man can, you know, change the fortunes of a bank unless they do something really bad or fraudulent, something like, or a Marcus, they pull a Marcus Hirst. So I think in terms of governance and structures of a bank, they're very, very, very much regulated to the extent where it's not a big risk. So, you know, for all intents and purposes, APSA should be able to function without a CEO. They've done it before. They were doing it, you know, when the interim is there. They have a strategy in place, which actually has been executed upon very well, even in the absence of a CEO during the time. So it will probably be business as usual. There'll be some, obviously, some cultural concerns within the organization, given that, you know, how things left off. And also, I know staff were not happy about how things ended up with Daniel. But obviously, from a public perception and, you know, and reputationally, a CEO is important.
Definitely learning lessons for APSA and for its peers, because this is not a unique situation. It may happen somewhere along the line to somebody else. Nolwandle Mthombeni, the senior banking analyst at Intellidex, thank you very much for joining us. It's time for Power News.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.